Good afternoon. It's time for another edition of Valley Voices. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. And today we have a special show, live show, about Huts for Vets, which is an organization that is based in Aspen and Basalt. And I have the co-founder, Paul Anderson, here in the studio with me, and Melody Capps, who's an Army veteran and a participant, and also a co-trip leader for Huts for Vets, and Brian Porter, who is the chief operating officer of Huts for Vets, will be joining us by phone in a few minutes. But welcome, Paul and Melody, to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Amy.
Yeah, thanks, Amy.
Yeah. Huts for Vets, you know, every time I mention Huts for Vets to somebody, you know, like if I was telling them, you know, when I'm telling them that you guys are going to be my guests on the show today, everybody has something good to say about this program. And it was, you founded this in 2013, is that right, Paul?
Correct.
And why? I mean, what was it specifically that made you take that step to found this organization?
A suicide rate of 18 veterans per day.
Okay.
At that time, I started reading and learning about veterans' issues. And when I learned that statistic, it was a shock to me. I thought something is desperately wrong here. And what can be done on the grassroots level? So created a community-based organization with all veteran board from the Korean War to the present time and all local people.
Right. I had the honor and privilege of meeting Lieutenant Colonel Dick Merritt the other day. I'm sorry he couldn't be with us, but he's part of the board. He's a Vietnam vet.
Colonel Merritt is a stalwart. Everybody refers to him as the Colonel.
The Colonel, okay.
Yeah, so his rank continues, and his influence is valley-wide and beyond.
Mm-hmm. You know, Melody, you were in the Army. Can you talk a little bit about your deployment and when you were in the service?
I joined straight out of high school. Okay. I signed up. I wanted that college education. I left my last couple years of service were in Afghanistan. I deployed 2010 through 11, came home, PTSD, and just not in a good place. That kind of spiraled me into finding organizations like Paul's for the Huts for Vets.
Okay. Specifically, what made you take this step to get, I mean, were you experiencing certain symptoms of PTSD?
I had attempted suicide in country in 2011. I came home. There wasn't very much local community support where I was at. It took a couple years for me to even grasp the fact that I needed that kind of support.
Really?
So I came out 2.5 years ago, I guess it was, for my first visit with Huts for Vets, mm-hmm. and have continued to return more as a support role and an alumni role, mm-hmm. to help the women who are returning now in the same state.
That's really key, I think, to help the women who are returning now, and help any women vets. I mean, I think helping all vets is extreme. It's more than important. But I'm wondering, Melody, as a woman, what has worked for you in this Huts for Vets program?
I think the key is Paul's separation. We have men's trips, and we have women's trips.
So it's gender specific.
Yeah, and it gives us the opportunity to focus on women's issues and not feel like we can't address them because we're in the company of men.
Okay.
And that's something that we've struggled with our entire time in the military is women. And he gives us the perfect opportunity to address these issues in an environment that feels safe. And together, mm-hmm. with women again, we're a minority within a minority.
Right.
So it's a great opportunity for us to come back together as women and focus on our issues.
What are some of the issues that both of you have seen in terms of women's groups that go out with Huts for Vets?
So women statistically have a higher suicide rate. They also,
when they come home,
mm-hmm, they also struggle with what we refer to as military sexual trauma. In addition to PTSD, women are sexually assaulted, harassed in the military, and that's referred to as military sexual trauma.
Okay.
And it's not very much discussed In this program, we do some readings that discuss the differences in men's and women's deployments and return home, but we don't specifically address that issue. But it is a situation that women who have struggled with that feel comfortable around one another again.
Okay.
Just because we understand and we've been through it.
Right. So you say the program doesn't really address the issue, but do women talk about it? Are they free to talk about it?
The women are invited to discuss as they feel free to. Nothing is directed to draw out any of these conversations.
Right.
It's just a safe environment for us to discuss more so our stress and how we're handling the stress, our return home and how we're returning home. There are no readings that specifically guide us to discuss our experiences. The method used is more loose to just kind of get you to think about things as opposed to directly discuss them.
Paul.
Melody mentions the readings, and I just want to explain that that's how our program is, I think, different from any other program. It's more than a walk in the woods. Sure, we walk in the wilderness. We hike 10 miles up to the hut, Margie's hut out of Lenado, and almost 2,700 vertical feet. It's not a lightweight walk. So nature is a huge part of it, but we also have a notebook of pre-assigned readings that everybody receives a month in advance, and those are charged with philosophy, nature, history, art, their poetry, and we discuss those readings through the Socratic technique of inquiry. They're not lectures. And whatever comes out of those discussions, it comes from the participants. That primes the pump for further disclosures and the disclosures of individual stories.
Do you find that the participants, Paul, are ready to do these pre-assignments?
Not right away. Okay. Some are very quiet. We've had some who have not hardly uttered a word for the whole program, but they're taking it in. And we will hear from them weeks, if not years later, saying that what they heard on the trip has changed their views of life. And but what typically happens is that the conversations become very enlivened because ultimately veterans are philosophers because they've seen and done things that have challenged their deepest beliefs. And they've confronted the biggest issues, life, death, and the meaning of existence.
And fidelity. And loyalty and
honor, right. Duty, many questions that are written about historically. I mean, for the men's groups, we read the St. Crispin's Day speech, Henry V, where Henry the King is trying to rally his troops with this idea of glory. And so we ask, what is honor? What is duty? Where does a soldier's loyalty ultimately lie? And what we hear, it lies with each other. Soldiers are incredibly loyal to each other.
And the thing that I find interesting that I mentioned to you earlier, Paul, was that the readings, you say the readings go all the way back to Homer. And it really jarred me when we were sitting in the office talking about that. And I thought, well, yeah, I mean, you, Melody, and Brian Porter, when he calls in, are part of, you know, this ancient... I mean, your colleagues, your fellow warriors go all the way back to when the ancients were, you know, when they, the ancients of the ancients of the ancients of the ancients. Very long line of warriors.
Yeah. The warrior culture endures and has ever since man's primitive self. And we go beyond that even because when we talk about nature, we talk about our earliest memories as early human beings. And that's what we try to connect with in the wilderness. And I think that's what a lot of people intuitively connect with is our ancient selves as primitive beings. Because as human beings, we lived 1,000 times longer in wilderness settings than we have in high-paced, industrialized society.
Hi, Brian. I'm here with Melody Capps and Paul Anderson, whom I think you know very well.
Yo, Brian.
Hey. How's it going?
Good.
I'm Melody.
Hey, Brian.
Thanks for calling in, Brian. We've been talking a little bit about the readings, but before we continue on that really interesting conversation, I find the readings, the part of the program, really fascinating. talk about Brian Porter. You were in the Marine Corps in Desert Storm. You were active on active duty from 87 to 92. You said you were in Panama and also involved in Desert Shield. First of all, thank you for your service. And secondly, what made you decide to get involved with wilderness healing?
I got involved with wilderness healing due to my own animalistic instinct as a wounded animal, I wanted to sort of get away and have my own spot and reduce life to its most basics. So that was what inspired me to be in wilderness. Was again the wounds that I believe I received, moral wounds and such. So
you're talking about psychological wounds.
Correct. Physical wounds aside, those somewhat heal. Psychological wounds, I believe, take a little bit longer to heal, and sometimes even are more painful.
When did you start to feel a turnaround for yourself?
So, I guess like a lot of people, rock bottom is a spot where you bounce a little bit or you settle there, and that was my personal turnaround spot. When Paul Anderson proposed the Huts for Best program to me initially, I was, you know, sort of like, wow, somebody got it, and this is exactly what I've been doing for myself. He, of course, added the amazing dialogues, the readings that you have mentioned, and I... being a Marine, maybe was somewhat skeptical that you were going to get combat veterans out into wilderness and then have them, read Shakespeare, et cetera.
Right.
But at the same time, I was willing to try, like I had tried other methods of healing, and was completely shocked and surprised at what level of conversation and the depth and the healing that could be achieved through conversation. I had recognized it through my own therapy, and talking about it is definitely a good thing. I tried to bottle it up and not talk about it for years, and that does not work.
Well, it seems to me that you had to exhibit a different kind of courage.
It is. I think it's a willingness to fight a new battle, I believe, and I believe that's how I look at it. That, you know, I felt, you know, courage in the fire is one thing, and you know, but courage back at home and courage to face, I guess, the realities of normal life, as a lot of people refer to it, after having seen what a not normal life is quite challenging. And again, your moral compass is a lot of times completely misadjusted, and you need to put in a pretty solid and serious effort as I would say a veteran coming home from seeing, doing, feeling some of the things that a large percentage of the population that never has to see, feel, or do.
Right. It's really, it's very awe-inspiring, very humbling to listen to you all speak. I wanted to ask Paul Anderson, are you a vet?
I'm a veteran of the peace movement, Amy. I came of age during the Vietnam War, graduated high school in 69. And, you know, I protested that war, but mm-hmm. I never protested the troops. I thought the troops were victims of a misguided national policy, a war that was unjustified. And so I protested it. I thought it was wrong. What I've come to know about veterans now, because I was afraid to actually approach veterans. I've got a few friends who were Vietnam vets. But I never really talked to them about their service because it made me uneasy because I wasn't there. Now I know veterans of post 9/11 mostly quite well, and I have huge respect for veterans. They are mission driven people. They're smart. They're motivated. They've got great courage. If there's a problem, they're going to be there. They're going to show up. Mm-hmm. They are essential to the society, and yet we throw them away.
I'm wondering what it was like, I guess, and this is a question for Melody and Brian and Paul, when you shared your story, Paul, with veterans, especially Vietnam veterans, how did they receive it?
Pretty well. Colonel Merritt, for example, Marine Lieutenant Colonel, served for many years. And I guess what really crystallizes it is that I'm willing to serve now. And I think any of us can do this. We don't have to serve in the military necessarily to serve our country. We can find a need, and whether it's veterans or any other demographic that needs help and support from a community, that's how we give back. So service is a multitude of options. And I think the veterans that I encounter, they're grateful for what I do. In fact, when I hear back from a veteran who has applied to our program, the first thing they say is thank you.
Mm-hmm. I have great respect for Paul in stepping up to take this position to help us in the veteran community, having never served. It takes more to step up when you've never experienced it yourself. And so
Why do you think that is?
You could understand and you can really relate to our struggle having been there, but it's hard to relate to our struggle having never been there. And it takes more to understand and take that step forward to say, I want to understand.
Okay.
So I greatly respect Paul and his work.
What's been the biggest struggle for you coming home, Melody?
Reintegration. Okay. It's the one thing we all talk about. It's a different world. You're stepping back into, as Brian said, normal. Mm-hmm. There is no normal. You come home and it's a new normal you have to recreate.
Okay. How has this wilderness experience and working with other vets helped you to adjust to this quieter, stranger, new normal life with families and friends and, you know, going out for a beer or whatever?
That's a long process, and that's what I've learned. Is that you can't come home and just be normal. And for me, the reintegration is finding myself. And for me, it was finding myself, as Paul says, in nature. Mm. It was taking that time, that time to be alone and really understand myself. Mm. And then the second part of that is reintegration, is finding myself in the community and finding other veterans that I can lean on.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that the program provides, is that it brings you back into your community, your setting, mm-hmm. those people that get you, and that's what you're with. You're with your people.
Right. It's like a recovery. It's a recovery community.
Exactly.
Before we continue, I want to remind listeners it's 4:48, and you're listening to Valley Voices here on KDNK. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host, and joining me today are Paul Anderson, who's the founder and director of Huts for Vets, Melody Capps, Army veteran, and Brian Porter, Marine Corps veteran, who are also part of the Huts for Vets program. You looked like you wanted to say something, Paul.
Yes. Sebastian Junger, a terrific writer and a real knowledgeable person about veterans. He was embedded in the Korngal Valley with U.S. forces
right,
there.
He put together a movie, a documentary
about
that.
Restrepo.
Right.
And he really knows, I think, what he's talking about. He wrote a book called Tribe. And what he describes there is that human beings are ultimately tribal. We evolved in a tribal setting, and that's what the military provides a lot of veterans, is a tribal community. Mm. When they are discharged and come home, they lose that. And they come to a society that is often me first and has disavowed the tribal network that is, I think, essential to our well-being. So in a way, the way American society has evolved into a very individualized society, they miss that bond desperately. And probably all of us miss that bond ultimately when we discover that there's something missing in American society today.
Is that sense of community. But it seems to me that for a veteran, it's a little bit stronger than that. Brian, can you chime in on any of this?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to be said in such a short amount of time. But, from what Melody and Paul both said, you know, the I feel the journey to healing is a road that, you know, as a veteran, you're going to be affected the rest of your life. It's not a one day thing, and you're completely healed. I also feel strongly that, you know, as Marine General Mattis says there's such a thing as post-traumatic growth, which is different than post-traumatic stress, and that at some point I feel proud that the experiences have made me the person that I am, and I wouldn't want to change that because I feel somewhat that I am a better person for all of the horrible things I have had to see and do. It's a weird thing to describe, but it's true.
Do any of the vets that come through the Huts for Vets program, do they ever re-enlist?
Yeah, some are still on active duty, and some are just subjecting themselves to repeated deployments. They come home, they don't fit, they go back. And
so it's a way of dealing with that discomfort that you guys are choosing to deal with in a different way.
Well, to speak on what Paul just said, you feel more comfortable away sometimes because that transition back is just... it's too much. Mm-hmm. And you would think coming home would be the easier transition, but it's really not for soldiers today. It's easier to go back, bottle it up and deal with it there than to come home and try to face reintegrating into society, dealing with what we've done. It's easier to stay gone, bottle it up, and we'll deal with it later.
Okay.
And I believe the huge bond between, soldiers, sailors, Marines, and airmen that, you feel like you have your brothers and sisters over there that you need to still be with, whether right or wrong, as the wars have been, and we oftentimes on our trips talk about, a good war, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but we have surmised that, like, World War II was a war that all of America was involved, everybody was participating,
right.
And whereas, these last, 40 years plus have been quite different.
Right. And a lot of times people now, I've talked to people, oh, is that war still going on? And I think, well, there are men and women fighting and we all, and you don't even realize that there's even a war. I mean, I'm not saying that war is good. I'm just saying that I agree with you in that it's almost a forgotten thing, which to me is very weird.
Well, it's engineered that way, Amy. Why bother the populace with something that's potentially distasteful? So I think often war is minimalized and even kept somewhat secretive. And I think those who wage it tend to feel that the population at large doesn't need to know about it.
Hmm. Well, we only have about 2 minutes left. I told you this half hour would go by really fast. And I would like to talk a little bit about how people can reach Huts for Vets. If there's a veteran listening or family of a veteran and they're thinking, gee, this sounds like a really cool thing. How do they apply? How do they get in touch with you?
Go to our website, www.hutsforvets.org. It's got everything. It shows you who we are. We have a blog there with writings from our veterans. There's an easy online application, and that's the place to start.
Okay. Hutsforvets.org. One last question for you, Paul. What have you learned doing this for the past 4 years?
Wow. It has changed my life. I think I've learned things that maybe have hurt me to learn. They say that post-traumatic stress is a contagion. And
really?
I wonder, that you can, spouses pick it up from their service spouses.
No kidding.
Sure, yeah. And it's intense. Sitting at the table at Margie's Hut at 11,300 feet, you learn things that you maybe don't want to learn.
About yourself.
About yourself, about the world, about what people can endure and how they react to it.
Wow, that sounds really intense. It sounds like it's really good. It sounds meaty and juicy and good. And you guys are, Melody and Brian, you're standing up for that. And takes a lot of courage. And I want to thank all of you, Brian Porter, Marine Corps veteran, Melody Capps, Army veteran, and Paul Anderson, Peace veteran. Thank you very much for taking the time. The website is hutsforvets.org. Thanks a lot,
Amy.
Everybody.
Thank you,
Amy.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Valley Voices. My guests have been Paul Anderson, Melody Capps, and Brian Porter talking about Huts for Vets. Thanks for listening.